With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
There have been many responses when we do pickups. I don't know if you've been reading them like I have.
There have been a lot of responses.
And here's what's great about it. This is how I know. This sounds really odd. This is how I know we did something right. Seriously.
We're right over the target, right?
Because we have gotten angry emails from truck guys, really frustrated that we didn't do trucks properly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gotten emails from truck people who own pickups that are thanking us up one side and down the other for finally covering trucks in the way that they and most people they know drive trucks, which is not towing, not hauling, just commuting. We've gotten almost in equal measure, sometimes within the same hour of each other, emails, like very excited emails on both sides. And I'm sitting here going, okay, so that worked.
Well, as a matter of fact, we got a note from our friend who owns the GT2RS that we drove against the 959.
Yeah.
He's a pickup truck owner. This is his daily. He's been through actually a few of them lately. He's had a bunch of different pickups. And he sent a Facebook message to both of us saying, thanks for doing it, because I don't tow 10,000 pounds on a regular basis. I just commute around in it, and I bomb around in the snow in Park City in it. We're like, you're right. You're absolutely right. So he liked the episode. And yes, thank you to all of you who watched the episode.
For sure.
I do want to mention Hennessy Mazda Buick GMC in Morrow, Georgia. They're just south of Atlanta, and they were the dealership that was kind enough to hear us out when we were in need of a pickup truck for that episode. And so they will listen to you. I'm recommending them because they were great to us.
They were great to work with us.
They gave us that GMC Sierra for the episode when we were out of press cars. We were kind of at our wits' end.
We were. End of our rope,
and they came through. So big thanks to them. They did actually send us an Instagram message saying, hey, did you see the whole episode? And so they were excited. They're great people to work with. So if you're looking for a car, please tell them that you saw the episode.
Fans of Everyday Driver. They had Miata RFs on there.
They did.
Just saying. You can get a big pickup, but they had Miata RFs there as well.
They
so there's a good wide range. So that's happening. By the way, and we'll tell you for sure, hopefully, I don't want to misspeak, but hopefully by Friday's podcast, happy Tuesday to you, hopefully by Friday's podcast, when we get in episode 3 on cable, this episode 1 with the Supras will be available on Amazon Prime. I don't want to speak too early, but based on the timelines we're aware of, it should go live on Amazon by then. We're going to try to be a week to 10 days behind the Motor Trend cable channel releases will be available on Amazon Prime and Vimeo. We'll keep you informed. We're going to close that gap as much as we can. So we've had 2 episodes so far on cable. The first one is coming to Amazon, and the third one is actually, what is it? It's the Porsche Experience Center Atlanta. It's coming up this
Pecattle.
Saturday. Yeah, for sure.
It's a weird acronym, but it's Pecattle, and it's all the Porsches. And I do want to thank our TV sponsors, Covercraft, who is bringing the entire Season 6 to you, and Griot's Garage and Haggerty. Mm-hmm. And the reason I keep thanking them is not just because of their support, but it's because the sponsors that Todd and I go after are specifically with you, our audience, in mind.
Yeah.
We want you to have the best stuff and the best products and availability and hear about all the cool stuff going on. So that's why we approach these sponsors, and that's why we're partnering with them. We want them, you know, as a long-term partner, and we want to feel like family, all of those reasons. So when there is an ad, I encourage you to listen to it, and it's because we just want you to have access and a code to use or whatever that is. So you will hear increasing ads, but it's because of their support and their sponsorship, and we're fans of their products too. So
and that keeps the show
going.
And you can use that code, which obviously we're trying to chase those codes for everything so you guys can get some benefit out of it as well. We should talk about Toyota.
there's always stuff going on with Toyota.
Yeah. But Toyota has gone mad. Toyota has had a fantastic little fever dream of a
finally,
hot
hatch. Finally, they've gone mad. This is a good thing.
They were all sensible with the Supra just so they could do this.
Sensibleness with all your
You probably have heard already. So the Supra has a GR designation on it, which is what, Gonzo Racing?
It's Gazoo.
Gazoo Racing. There it is. Okay, so
Gazoo Racing. I like Gonzo, though.
I do, too.
That could work better,
Gazoo Racing Supra. Well, now there is the GR Yaris.
Yes.
Which is a tiny little three-cylinder, 1.6-liter engine. This is almost 270 horsepower and torque, all-wheel drive, 6-speed manual. Honestly, with the exception of three-cylinder, I haven't said anything that we aren't all salivating over. But if you're going to get that kind of power for a three-cylinder, I don't care how many cylinders it has.
Well, absolutely. That just means it's small.
Yes.
And looking at this thing, which was recently introduced at the Tokyo Auto Salon, I like the styling. Mm-hmm. I'm actually on board with it.
Agreed.
Some of the Toyota stuff has been just the CHR.
What happened
like,
there?
Yeah. What would you do? Stop drawing. Stop sketching. No, that doesn't need to wrap. You don't need an extra line there. It doesn't need an extra highlight. But this, mm-hmm. even though it is in white, I can see it. I like the rear view. I like the haunches. It
Agreed.
Looks muscular.
Agreed.
All-wheel drive in this little thing. Mm-hmm. I don't care how many cylinders it has. Like
I
you.
I agree.
I just care about the power output, manual transmission. The big problem is there's mm-hmm. been no announcement for U.S. or North American availability.
Not coming here.
Now, that could change. There's always the start of, you know, marketing speak. We're no information. But, you know, if we all, you know, scream and shout and yell enough and throw things.
Yeah, I mean, they almost always do special editions for Japan. This is, at the moment, a special edition for Japan. Let's see if it goes all over the place, including here. Now, of course, obviously, if you bring it here, you got to go left-hand drive. And it's right-hand drive right now. So that's
okay.
why a lot of times the specials for Japan wind up in the UK because we didn't have to change anything. So let's hope they make a left-hand drive version. Let's hope they make it and they'll bring it here. I don't know any of that stuff. I really hope so. I mean, honestly, how often, and the answer is almost never, does a new crazy hot hatch drop?
Seriously, you're absolutely right. It's not often.
Yeah. I mean, thank God the Veloster N showed up.
No, oh, yeah.
But, I mean, think about the fact – think also about all-wheel drive hatches. I mean, when we did the piece with the Focus RS, we brought a grand total of four.
Mm-hmm.
And we even had to bring the Evo out of retirement to make it four. Okay,
amazing.
So all-wheel drive, little tiny, very powerful hatches. More of that, and here is one just not for us, apparently.
Really cool. All right, well, we are continuing with our Topic Tuesday discussion of best cars from each manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Spanning about a decade from the present, so we're in 2020 as of this recording, and spanning about a decade going backwards. And this is something that we wanted to include. We did this about 5 years ago,
yep.
and we're going to continue on starting in the Fs with Fiat. But we did this about 5 years ago and thought, well, let's revisit this because there's been a lot of new car introductions,
yeah,
but there's still
some
good ones that are still worthy and now for sale. They're what people are shopping for because you can afford them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we like this the span of things, and we're going to go through, what, Jeep today, hopefully?
Hopefully we'll get all the way to Jeep. Yeah, that's Fiat,
that's
Ford, GMC, Honda, Hyundai, Infiniti, Jaguar, and Jeep. Now, you may have noticed I went through the Fs. I didn't mention Ferrari because this is Everyday Driver, and while Ferrari is interesting, we are not going to be covering the hyper exotics in this discussion because we're hoping for cars, again, of this last 10 years that you may be able to afford every bit of product we're talking about right now, new.
Sure.
And if you can, please buy, or hear stuff in their back decade of back catalog that is worthwhile used and out there. Neither of those really qualify for Ferrari or Koenigsegg or McLaren, or these will not be covered in this discussion for obvious reasons.
I was thinking about the exotics, and I suppose we could do special Topic Tuesdays about them,
mm-hmm.
but here's the problem. None of us can afford them.
Mm-hmm.
We aspire to own them.
Mm-hmm.
We've driven maybe a tiny handful of some of these cars.
Fraction. You're right, yeah.
But we haven't driven all of them.
True.
And
true,
then
true.
Ultimately, it's kind of pointless. Okay, say we've driven all the exotics,
mm-hmm.
and we're over here hashing it up and slicing and dicing about which... what do you like?
Mm-hmm.
What appeals to
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
So yes, I want to talk about the exotics, but on the other hand, they're not really relevant in this discussion because we want to be able to buy the fun.
Yeah.
Used, new, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever your budget is. I mean, we say it all the time. Whatever your budget is, we want you in a car you love. I don't care what your budget requirements are. Let's find you that car that meets those needs that's fun. So let's dive in. This means we'll also be covering SUVs, minivans, all kinds of stuff does come up in this discussion because all of it comes up on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with Fiat.
All right, so the Fiat 500L is on your list, I'm guessing?
I'm going to go with no.
It's not?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
the
man.
L, the X, these are all bad. These are all bad variants. But the Abarth is on there.
It is. The 500 Abarth's on my list. You know what made my list?
Okay.
Is the 124 Spyder.
Yeah.
We have not driven the Abarth flavor of that, which is
all
like
of like four more horsepower.
Sticker
yeah.
package, really.
It practically is, yeah.
But I loved that Spyder because it had a different engine than the Miata RF that we drove.
You and I disagreed, but you liked it a lot. Yeah.
I liked the immediacy of that engine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then here I am loving the new engine in the
mm-hmm.
RF
mm-hmm.
with the immediacy, even more power in that car.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And it's not just gobs more horsepower solves anything. It's tuned for the car in this
mm-hmm.
Miata RF. But that's what I noted. Even though it was a tiny difference,
mm-hmm.
I still felt the torque come on earlier.
Yeah.
And I felt the shove, and then it kind of brought the chassis to life for me. So I do like that car. The styling is kind of a personal preference.
It's
I get
to each
that.
His own, for sure.
But I like that they at least offered it.
Mm-hmm.
I like
yeah.
that the partnership was there.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's been... You know, not often that Mazda really does the partnership thing anymore.
True. I mean, they used to, but I mean, I think it's also interesting that that partnership happened with Fiat of all people. You made a list of people that the Miata is going to be partnered with. Fiat wouldn't have made my like long weird list, okay? But yet here we are.
I mean,
we drove that car versus the original engine in the RF and the 86 in our Affordable Sports Cars TV episode from a few seasons back. So we did that then, and we both were impressed with the Spider. You actually liked it more than I did, but the big discussion here is, you would like a Miata that doesn't look like a Miata.
Mm-hmm.
Because inside, it's a Miata. They took the Mazda badge off the center of the airbag and they put the Fiat one on. I mean, it's just Miata. But it obviously has different styling. It looks like a slightly larger car, and that mostly is a styling trick. So it is a fantastic Miata alternative. Mm-hmm. I personally would take the Miata, period, and I certainly would take the Miata with the upgraded engine over the Fiat.
Oh,
124.
Sure. Absolutely.
But we have had a few of you write in. I totally get it, where you just that styling connects with you, and that is completely valid, and it's a great car.
I'll try to put my finger on it, and I think it is the proportions of the headlights, the signature look to that Miata.
Yeah.
It's been out long enough. The ND has been out long enough that I like it enough, but I still maintain the features. The two headlights and the two taillights are just slightly too small because the car is small to begin with. I think the Fiat 124 has gone a little bit too far the other way. It's a little bit too big for the size of the car. Let's scale that back. But the shapes, all that kind of stuff, make it feel more like that 50s Roadster, which I think has the appeal for
that car.
That's
what they're doing for sure. Yeah. So that really is the Fiat list. I don't think there's anything else on that list, actually. I think we're
really
done
don't.
There. I think that finishes it. We can go to Ford, where the list is long.
It's huge, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
All right, so we're jumping in. I think probably the top car that changed enthusiasts, car journalists, and every owner's perspective on what a tiny, fun front-wheel drive car can do. It's also the car that I called out when I found one for $7,800, and I thought it was, you know, a real thing. It was actually a salvage title, and
they're just about down there now.
I freaked every Fiesta ST owner out promptly and said, "I'm underwater."
Everybody was underwater, but yeah, it's just about that case now.
But it is the Fiesta ST. I still think about that car.
It's great.
It's still such one of our usual suspects, is what
Absolutely
we'll call
it.
Yep. It's on the transporters, you know, for both of us, I think, and we love that car. It's definitely a defining car when it came out. The big problem is the subsequent generation does not come to North America.
Which is improved in every way. The styling's better, the interior's better, the power's better. Based on what Tom is telling us over in Germany, the dynamics are even better, which is crazy to think about.
That's amazing.
So it is all across the board improved, but not for the U.S., which is also a bummer. So it's added with that Yaris on the forbidden fruit list.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
That and the Alpine A110. These are my top three on the why can't I get that car list.
It's a delicious list.
Yeah. So anyway, but we have talked about, look, if you've listened to this podcast for more than like an episode and a half, you've heard us talk about the Fiesta ST for somebody, because look, if you're out there right now and you're thinking, Fiesta ST, really?
Yeah.
I genuinely, you need to try to drive one. I fully acknowledge, like the Lotus Elise, this is not a car for everyone. But I think it'd be very difficult for anybody that is an enthusiast that likes a manual transmission fun car to get in the Fiesta ST, drive it hard, and get out and be like, nah. It may not be for you, but I think you'll go, I get it.
You know, you and I drove that car as part of the ST Octane Academy now 3 years ago, I think.
It's been a while. Yeah.
And we were very impressed. So that was also the Focus ST in the same school. And so they had, I think, two different kinds of tires on both cars, but they performed really well. It was a lot of fun. And so that was the school that used to be held out here at the Utah Motorsports campus. Mm-hmm. When you bought one of those two cars, you could come to the school for free and drive other people's cars, essentially Ford's own cars, and go beat on them and really learn autocrossing and time attack and all these kinds of things. And then what you got in return was a plaque with your name on it, but you got a special badge.
Mm-hmm.
So it was reversed colors. I think instead of red with black outline, it was now black with a tiny red pinstripe around it. That is the indication, if it's replaced on either of those two cars, that somebody has been to
the
Octane Academy.
Yeah, I've been to the school. They gave this out at the very end as like, these are the only way to get these badges, which is fun. Now, they say that. For all I know, you can get on Amazon right now and probably buy a dozen of them. But that's what those are supposed to be
Here's
for.
Here's the extra box we found in the back.
Seriously.
Guess we'll get rid of these on
eBay. I'll sell you mine. Anyway, so Fiesta ST, Focus ST is worthwhile, but I actually went straight to the RS.
Did you?
Because the RS is a car that I'm very surprised Ford made. The RS is to Ford, I think, as this new Yaris is to Toyota. Where it's
just
like,
that.
why why did you go that far down that road? I mean, I'm glad, mm-hmm. but really that far down the road? I still think that'd be a fantastic winter car.
Isn't that interesting? It's kind of out of the public discussion these days.
It is. It is.
It's not really much discussed anymore.
Which means they're getting affordable. That's what that means. When they dropped off the radar, they're getting affordable. But I keep thinking about the fact that that is an all-wheel drive hatch, which is fantastic for the winter in spite of the Lancer that's blown its engine. That's a fantastic recipe for the
engine.
I had to go back there. But no, it's a fantastic recipe for the winter. I've got an all-wheel drive hatch. I can carry stuff. I can bomb around in the snow. But because the Focus RS has completely inexplicable, ridiculous drift mode, it means I can enjoy my snowy parking lot.
And gold metallic flake in the blue paint.
Which is weird, but very, very cool. Yeah,
super
that's
cool.
A great one.
Well, speaking of good in the winter, is my 2012 Ford Expedition.
True.
It is on
my
list.
That's the last 10 years. It should be. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These things are bomb-proof. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the reason I love them so much is because of the entire reason Chevrolet, GMC, Cadillac have introduced their new huge Suburban and Denali and all this stuff with independent rear suspension. Ford has known this, and the Expedition has had independent rear suspension longer than the Mustang.
That's an interesting thought.
The Expedition had independent rear suspension in 2004.
Now, I know some of you are saying, but the 99 Cobra had the – that wasn't all Mustangs. We're talking about
a Mustang. I'm talking about your average Mustang. Yes.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. And that is a fascinating stat.
Isn't that interesting?
That the Expedition had it before. That is very funny.
That's why they ride so well.
Yeah.
The thing just runs. Mm-hmm. It's comfortable. It's the, hey, everybody's together. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily, I don't look at it as the safe car, even though it's big and heavy. And
it's the family car.
Plow everybody down.
Yes.
But I do like having it. I still enjoy it. I drive it in the winter. It just goes. It's the ultimate road trip car.
That leads me
it's
to something
so
about my list that I noticed when I started going through this. Because as we've seen, of course, Ford is leading the charge on we don't make cars anymore, we only make SUVs. I think Ford's at its best when they go big. I think the middle grade stuff, and I'll get there. I think the middle
as
grade
a
stuff.
Metaphorical term, you mean? Or
no,
as
I mean,
a
I'll give
physical
you an,
size.
I'll give you an example. All of the above. I'll give you an example. The Fiesta ST is like a moonshot and a great car. The Focus RS, same kind of thing.
Yeah,
okay, so they go really big, way down the road and thing. But in the case of their SUVs, I think everything they make is kind of fine until you get to Expedition size. When you get big, it gets awesome. Really, really good.
Great
space, durable, all the things you're saying. I really like it. I mean, like the Explorer, for example, is a fine execution of that area. But I don't think it's a standout.
You're being nice.
I don't think it's fine.
Yes.
The Edge and these kind of guys, fine.
Yeah.
But I would
never
gravitate toward it. I'd go to other places in the market, okay? But the Expedition, it's holding some ground there.
Totally.
In a similar way that the F-150, I have to mention because it's ubiquitous. But the Raptor?
The Raptor.
Come on. That's the F-150 no one needs. I mean, that's really what it is. It's the F-150 that nobody needs. I was at school today. Sorry, side rant. I was at school today. Really snowy morning this morning. I mean, with the winter tires on, the Cayenne was still sliding around.
Okay.
The folks with the All Seasons were all over the road.
Okay.
My son has got his little knee scooter thing because he's still got a broken ankle. So he's got a little knee scooter.
Yes.
So you got to navigate that. And so it took him in. Couldn't back out of the parking lot.
Seriously.
Reason, here's why. Because when I came back out of the parking lot, the second bell, because it's like first bell, get the kid in school, second bell, now they're late. Second bell was about to ring as I walked out of the parking lot. And here came a dad in the family Raptor, the big super cab Raptor. And he came sideways.
You're
into,
kidding.
Across the, I hate to say it, but he came sideways across the big disabled space right in front of the school to get his kids into school at the last minute.
You're kidding me.
I had to get in the Cayenne, which happened to be parked kind of quasi like behind him, and wait. Because Raptor existed for kids to disembark. So the Raptor is it's awesome. It is the F-150 no one needs.
Look, any year of the Raptor, and now, because it does not have the V8 offered in the Raptor anymore, people are looking at the first generation of Raptor thinking, well, it's got the V8. I want the V8 in that Raptor. And they've come down in price a lot. Mm. So, yes, they're very expensive new. They'll do almost anything. They're a superhero truck.
They're a truck that 90% of us you will never it is the supercar of trucks.
Absolutely.
You buy a supercar and you don't ever use everything it can do. You drive a Raptor and you probably don't either.
You know, we've talked about Ford in past podcasts as the company having a performance version in every single category of car they make.
Mm-hmm.
That's changing.
It is changing, unfortunately. At least it's changing in this country.
Fiesta ST
for
sure.
But now it's just like, you can get your ST version of the Edge.
Hey,
you can't get it.
Can't wait.
While we're here, actually, on other good cars, though, the Mustang. The current gen of the Mustang is pretty excellent in just about every flavor. You know, you got to sit down with your spec sheet and spec it right. But in just about every flavor, it's good. All the way up to, and we've driven both versions, GT350 and GT350R are genuinely phenomenal cars with also a lot of personality. We have not driven the new 500. It stands to reason that will also be good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the Mustang is, honestly, if you tell me right now, I went and bought a current gen Mustang, I would say, awesome. You probably really like that car. There's been generations of the Mustang that I'm just like, no. But this one's really good.
Yeah, well, I've still got the Boss 302 on my list from 2012, 2013.
Okay. All right, I see it. Yeah,
what I love is the raw, unfiltered thing that car is.
I'm not a huge fan of that gen, but the Boss is good.
The Boss is just, it's so much fun and different and raw and angry, and you just, everything else, every other thought in your head is irrelevant. It's just, it's such a drug.
Don't bother me, I'm driving the Boss.
It really is.
I like it, that's good.
So, yeah, that's on the list.
And then, look, I know we're not talking exotics, but we'd be remiss to leave Ford and not at least say, the Ford GT exists.
It does.
And my favorite thing about it is the contrast with the Ford GT versus every other big mid-engine reveal that anybody's done in the last 10 years.
Agreed.
Where, I mean, and the joke we've made before is when they dropped it, the auto show that they dropped it on was the big reveal of the production version of the Honda NSX, and everybody promptly forgot because Ford out of nowhere went, oh, by the way, zing, look what we did. And
whipped the sheet off.
Seriously, and you compare and contrast it to the long gestation and tease of things like the Supra, the NSX, and even the C8 Corvette. For Ford to drop out of the sky with, oh, we've been doing this on the side. That's the thing about it I'm most impressed by. By the way, it's also very cool.
You know I'm all about future tech and what's coming at us, but I cannot bring myself to include the Mach-E Mustang on this list. Mm. A, it's not in production. B, we haven't driven it. C, they named an electric SUV the Mustang.
And it has no door handles for your kids to use. Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole separate side rant.
So that's not on there, even though other tech-worthy cars could make my list. I'm leaving that one off for now.
We'll wait until we drive it, see what we think of it then, yeah.
All right. Are we done with Ford?
We're done with Ford. I GMC,
wrung that dirty washcloth
we
out.
We have GMC. I only have two. GMC, in case you don't know, quick side note. General Motors is the monster parent company of lots of sub-brands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chevy is obviously Chevy. You know Chevrolet. But GMC is trucks only underneath the General Motors brand.
Yeah.
Okay? So you can get Chevy trucks, but GMC just makes trucks, or SUVs, as the case may be. I have two on here. I have the Acadia. I think it is a genuine contender. If you need a 7-to-8-seat SUV that is not full running gear, you're buying the minivan alternative. I think it is a viable contender. I don't know if that's the best, but it's a viable contender. I think it's gotten better. It's also gotten a little smaller since the first gen. The first gen had some reliability problems. I owned that gen, and yeah. I also have to bring up, because it's just bomb-proof, I owned one, and they're still great. But they're huge, Yukon or Yukon XL, which is the Chevy Tahoe or the
big
Suburban, respectively. That if you need 5 to 8 people and also a bunch of gear, and by the way, I'd like to tow my boat, you go there.
For sure. The only thing on my GMC list is the story about your son who correctly identified what the performance I want to be a Raptor version of the Chevy Colorado wanted to be.
Okay, keep going. I remember this. Yeah.
It's called the Bison.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd's son, knowing our car talk and knowing everything about the Raptor and how amazing it is. And I think it was about a year ago at this time.
We were
up to our eyeballs and Raptors and doing stuff with Raptors. And the Bison was introduced. Mm-hmm. Look over here.
We're doing something like the Raptor. And my son, by the way, two side notes. He went through a major phase that kind of ended around that time. He went through a major phase where he was watching lots of Wildcrats. If you've got kids, you've probably seen that show. Knew ridiculous encyclopedic things about animals. To the point that his third grade teacher said if he ever interjected with a fact about an animal, she learned about a month in. She was just like, whatever he says, I just go, that's interesting, because I'm not going to look it up because it's going to be right. So he was encyclopedic about animals. That was one thing. He also was pretty obsessed with the Jurassic Park films at the time.
Yes.
So keep going.
He said, well, it's called the Bison. Why would they call it a bison? It's not Predator. And I went, you're absolutely correct.
He was like, Ford has the Raptor. That's a Predator. A bison's not a Predator. A bison would be eaten by the Raptor. We were both like, and scene.
Like,
we're done.
You get it. You're 9. This is the best. That's the only thing on my GMC list.
That's very funny. Well, then that also is a pretty easy story right about my son. We're longtime users and big believers in Griot's Garage car care products. That's because while many other brands are just rebranded versions of the same few products, Griot's Garage has developed, manufactured, and bottled bespoke car care products since 1990.
In fact, many of their first customers were collector cars displayed at Pebble Beach. Griot's is a family company based in Washington State, still dedicated to having the best products for every car and every budget. As a matter of fact, I learned my certified Paul-Owen car care style from Griot's.
We've both used Griot's Garage car care products on our own cars for over 20 years, and we wouldn't use anything else. If you're wondering how to get going, they offer free training and techniques through their videos and website, and starter kits to help your car look its best.
Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made in the USA. They offer a 100% lifetime guarantee, so give them a try.
When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code EVERYDAY for 10% off your order. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
All right, here we go. Jump into Honda.
This is another one with a pretty big list. We could go for a while, but
there's some tasty cars on
for
here.
For sure, absolutely.
I'm jumping right in, and I'm starting with the incredible, most amazing Honda CR-Z.
Overlooked. Overlooked. I wasn't sure where you're going to go, but it is overlooked. Here's
2011 to 2016.
It's a total alt car. You wouldn't expect it. But if you want something that is worthwhile gas mileage, but you'd like to actually row your own gears, it's pretty much that car.
I mean, I admit I need power. I don't like small cars that are underpowered.
Yeah.
When the CR-Z was introduced, it was underpowered. But then this special edition appeared.
I know.
I think it was the Jackson Racing flavor of the CR-Z.
It was the special, now you can spend almost 50 grand on your CR-Z.
It was rare and pointless and nobody owned it, but they had one.
Pointless. That's perfect.
But Honda brought one to one of the track days.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no cars available, only this forlorn CR-Z. And I thought, all right, I want to be on track, so I'll go drive something. What's that? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll drive that. And it came to life. And it was brilliant. And I had a great time. And CR-Z, I still recommend them. So much fun.
Here's the thing. I actually say while we're there, I think that is a worthwhile. If you find one, you can get them super cheap. They are very efficient. If you're looking for an efficient commuter, six-speed, that is a phenomenal car, honestly. It is prone to a bit of understeer if you really, really push it. Ask me how I know. I drove it kind of hard on a candied road. But it has, I mean, honestly, it has really good dynamics. It's a really good Honda product, and it has great gas mileage. It looks kind of futuristic. If you're into that kind of thing,
totally.
I think it's great.
Totally. My cousin David had a 91 CRX, and he let me drive it when I was thinking junior high or early high school, something like that, and I just fell in love.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And so the CR-Z is sort of this later manifestation.
Yeah, carries the torch for that. Yeah, for sure. So the CR-Z is definitely a surprise-yourself car. In the similar vein, look, I know it's not for everybody, but we talked about it on our Fast Blast. The updated, currently on sale now version of the Insight, I think, is the better Prius.
You've mentioned that. It didn't make my list, but I acknowledge.
But I'm just thinking about it, because in the same area as the CR-Z, I'm not shopping in that market segment, nor am I shopping in the market segment for just economy. But that's where the Insight lives, and it does a great job there.
Yeah.
Surprisingly roomy.
Fair
it's going to just run. It doesn't wave a flag for, look at me, I'm hybrid. It just does its job.
Okay. Here's another one in the Honda lineup that falls into those categories.
Okay.
The Passport.
I have it on my list, too.
If you're not into Subarus and you're not wanting Subarus and you're wanting something different, you're a Honda person, the Passport is actually pretty cool. I mean, I imagine it for my sister and her husband and their family and everything they need it for. And I thought, that could just really work. Because they kind of take care of cars. And
no,
they're going to berate me if they're listening. But they'll do, you know, like everything at once every few years. But the rest of the time, they just
run in spite of them. Yeah.
Into the ground.
Yeah.
How about washing once in a while? No?
Well, we have a Fast Blast on the Passport, and I will admit I was not very nice. But I will say this, the Passport is on my list because I actually do think it makes more sense than the CR-V. And they almost overlap.
Agreed to that.
But in a lot of the specs, they overlap. I think it is the more interesting car than the CR-V. And the CR-V is a huge volume seller for Honda.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Passport's a little more interesting. So I have it on the list for that reason. Other things on the list here, I bring it up often. I'm a big fan, the Honda Fit. If you want a little economical, do-it-all, wow, I can carry that too car, Honda Fit. That it is the best, great name, because it is the best space use of any car being sold. I stand by that. Every time I get in one, I'm just like, how did they figure all this out? How does every manufacturer not figure this out?
It's like yacht designers did that car.
It's crazy. So I think the Honda Fit is worthwhile. Also, our shooter, Ben, he shot an American original, and also the Atlanta trucks piece you just saw. He was a shooter on that as well.
Yeah.
he actually has driven a Honda Fit, autocrossed it for years, done very well with it. So I know they can be very dynamic as well. So the Honda Fit can't be overlooked. I'm going to say it. Minivan.
Oh, really?
The Odyssey is actually, if you're shopping minivans, the Odyssey needs a serious look. And I think the Odyssey, unless you must have all-wheel drive for some reason, I think the Odyssey makes the Pilot irrelevant.
Okay. I can see that. As a matter of fact, my dad has an Odyssey. And he uses it as a modified van for his electric wheelchair. And so it enables him to get around. And it runs. It's great. It's kind of noisy. And we joke to ourselves, because it's modified, like, man, best $70,000 we ever spent on this thing.
those conversions are so expensive.
And he always brings up the, you know what else I could have gotten for $70,000? Yeah, Dad, I do.
Yeah, but he gets to drive around. That's the trade-off.
But on the other hand, it gives him mobility, which I'm really thankful for. And, of course, the Civic Si and the Civic Type R are definitely on our list.
Yep.
The Type R, just so you know, if you haven't driven one, if you can get past the styling, if you can...
It's not for everyone. Let's go there, yeah.
I wish there was like a bicycle seat post quick release for the wing. If they could just boop, two quick releases,
all right,
and
that's done.
Pull that off, because, you know, we're not going 120 where the air, you know, the downforce really kicks in and pushes the rear end of the car. Just commuting, and I just want a fun car, even on a canyon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could kind of help juice things. But you need to know, if you're into the Civic Type R, the wheels and tires off the showroom floor are 20s. They're heavy for this car, even though it doesn't drive like that. They're 53 pounds per corner for the wheel and tire. They're very heavy. So some people have downgraded to 18s, gotten lighter wheels, and that car comes to life even more. It's already brilliant. And the switcheroo between the suspension settings is what's most surprising about this car. How can a 53 pounds at each corner, 20s with rubber bands on them,
it's rubber bands,
ride so comfortably?
I continually am shocked by the ride quality of that car with those wheels. You look at it and just go, that's going to be backbreaking. And
it's magic trick.
Let's compare and contrast. We have a piece on this. It's season 2, 3. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank right now, but where we put it with the Focus RS.
Is it 3? Can't remember.
Anyway, we put it with the Focus RS. It's a really cool
season. Many moons ago.
It's available on Prime, free on Prime on Amazon right now. That episode is up there. And what's interesting about that is the Focus RS rides worse than the Civic Type R with smaller wheels.
It's unbelievable.
With more tire.
By the way, that car didn't have the volume knob.
And we've
the subsequent
fixed
generations
it. They fixed it.
Have a volume knob.
Civic Type R is very impressive. I have to do, look, Honda's got a lot of workhorse cars here that aren't sexy but are really good in their market segment. I have to list two more. Get the Honda Accord. You can get it with a manual.
That's true. That's a great point.
And even if you don't, it is a run in spite of you car, and it is surprisingly dynamic. Honda kind of has a baseline, kind of like Mazda, where their cars have got a decent level of dynamics no matter what. But I think the Accord is a standout in that area. And if you want a pickup, kinda. You want all of the good stuff about a pickup, none of the downsides. It doesn't need to look like a traditional pickup. You get yourself a Honda Ridgeline, and you generally are happy. The people I know that have had Ridgelines love them.
Yeah, I did like – I even liked the first version when it came out. But the reason they didn't do that unibody look anymore is because pickup truck owners didn't like it. It didn't have a seam, a break from the cab to the bed.
Yeah.
And that's why the new Ridgeline has that, so it looks more like a rough and tumble pickup truck.
I bought a truck.
Something else to note on the Type R and the Si, the Civics, they only are available with manual transmissions. As of this recording, they're still that is the differentiator. If you want an automatic, you're not getting a Type R or an Si. Interesting information.
Moving on to Hyundai, and I imagine you have a big list here because it's one of your favorite brands.
I do.
We aren't doing Kia. This is just Hyundai. Under Hyundai does fit Genesis.
That's true.
I have the Genesis Coupe. If you haven't driven one, they're excellent. This is, we've had it in a few pieces. It is not as dynamic as the Toyota 86 Twins, which is why it doesn't get recommended a lot for a Focus driver's car. But if you were using it as a commuter, it is a better commuter. It is a genuinely really solid setup rear-wheel drive coupe. And you can get it with their good V6, which is the better way to go than their 2-liter turbo in that car. The gearbox is not a standout, but the car in general is surprisingly good.
That recipe is still valid.
Completely, yes.
Rear-wheel drive, front-engine coupe that's just spacious and fast, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think over time the first gen looks better than the second gen. But
do
that's
you?
A whole
you still like that first gen?
I think so. I think over time it's aged better.
I'd like to see their new styling elements applied to a new coupe.
Where's the new Genesis coupe? I agree with that.
For sure. Well, that is definitely on my list, as is the Veloster. First generation, I liked the Veloster. Second generation was okay. got more power, came out with the turbo.
Yeah.
And then we drove the Veloster N as part of the Middles episode.
It's awesome.
From season 5. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely astounded
it's
by the
really
Veloster
impressive.
N.
It's really impressive. Yeah.
I love this car. I think it's brilliant. I love how it looks. I love the quirkiness. It's fast. I would own a Veloster N. Absolutely.
I can see it. Super fun.
It's absolutely amazing. So the N is Namyang, South Korea, where their test track is, and also Nürburgring, so where the car was developed
in the home.
Where the
other test track is,
yes. And so the N has now being applied to more Hyundai product across the line. The i30N is one we drove in Germany on the ring. Pretty cool.
The guy that used to run BMW's M division is now working for Hyundai, working on their N cars.
Sir, was that M and N?
Yes, exactly. M and N. He's doing both of those. While we're here, I actually have to bring up the Genesis G70.
Okay.
Very, very good car.
I agree.
If you're shopping in the 3 Series segment, go drive the Genesis G70. At least compare and contrast there. That's worthwhile. A couple others that may surprise you. One, I'm going to mention the Elantra Sport. We don't get what they get in Europe, which is called the i30N. We drove that on the ring this year.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. It's essentially the Veloster N running gear in a different body shape, kind of a more usable body shape. The Elantra Sport gets close. It's got like the N package, kind of like they do the M package.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got the N package, but not all the i30N goodies, which is unfortunate. But if you're looking for a Civic alternative, the Elantra is solid. And then we recently did a Fast Blast. I'm not a huge fan of the styling, but the Palisade is very good.
Thank you. Yes, the Palisade YouTube Fast Blast review just got released. So if you're interested, you're shopping, it is worth a look. There's more explanation about the styling and about the dynamics of the car and the differences between it and the Telluride. We loved the Palisade. It doesn't matter whether you like the styling or not, but as far as a recipe,
impressive.
For the price and
yeah.
for what it can do yeah. and the amenities, impressive SUV. And
agreed.
So that it shares the Telluride platform. That new GV80 that is coming out from Genesis, I don't believe shares the same platform.
I think
it's a little bit different. Correct me if I'm wrong based on what I'm reading, but it's definitely designed to be the higher end. I'm still not all about the styling on that one. I actually like the Palisade better, but anyway.
That's not an endorsement, but we'll see.
The weather's changing, but the sun is still out, and it's baking your car's interior.
Luckily, all you need is a custom sunscreen from our friends at Covercraft. They're awesome. They're amazing. These foldable sunscreens fit perfectly in the windshield of your car and keep your car cooler when you're off enjoying the sunshine.
These custom sunscreens come in a variety of colors, and they're an affordable and simple way to keep your car cooler in the summer and protected from damaging UV rays all year long.
We swear by our custom sunscreens. I love it. It's one of our very favorite car accessories. Remember, you can get 10% off your car sunscreen by using the code EVERYDAY right now at covercraft.com, or you can follow the link from our sponsors page. Infiniti doesn't have a lot on the list, but they're on here as well. The problem with the Infiniti list is the massive weird name shift in the middle of the last decade, where it was like, what car is that now?
J's, so, Q's, P's.
Let's just pick some numbers, and we'll put some letters behind some numbers, and we'll call it a day. The G37, which is their 3 Series fighter, we always liked that. I don't think it's as good as the 3 Series.
No.
But this is going to sound weird. I don't think it's as good as the 3 Series, but I think often it can be more fun to drive than the Lexus. It's
an alt.
People
paid a whole lot less and almost got a 3 Series. That's why they sold so many.
So G37 became the Q50. If you're shopping in that market segment, it's worthwhile. If you wanted the G37 Coupe, that became the Q60. We've driven that, including on the track. Mm-hmm. The problem with Infiniti is that they decided to leave all actual steering connections in the last decade. You know, we don't actually need – I mean, come on. It's steer-by-wire. Now, I understand all aircraft are that way. If this is technology that exists – but you really have gone to video game steering.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, last year, 2019, was the 30th anniversary of Infiniti.
Hmm.
Launched in 1989.
Interesting point.
They had their entire celebration at Spaceport America in New Mexico, where they brought the Edition 30 versions of all of their cars.
All right.
The problem is they painted them white. I just want everybody to know that the future is not painted white. There are other colors that will be available in the future. You know all the movies, the space movies?
Everybody's got white.
You're wearing a white suit that is weird and designed by Philippe Starck, and it's white walls, and you speak to a computer. Every single movie from the 70s to now.
I can't do that, Hal.
Every single movie is all white. The future is white.
Dave. I can't do that, Dave. Hal speaking, right?
The future is not painted white. The cars were painted white, but it's the cheap paint. There's no pigment in the...
It was easier for us to paint the set white because we could get a lot of that in bulk. And it's really easy to light. When we throw light anywhere near a white set, everything becomes kind of lit. So it's just, it'll be balanced. It'll be easier to shoot.
They're at Spaceport America. Space isn't white.
I don't know if you've noticed. Not white.
Anyway, so yes, I do want to add two cars that set the direction for Infinity, which I like.
And I have one more too, but keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
It is the Prototype 9 and Prototype 10 from past subsequent Pebble Beach Monterey weekends. This actually turned my head. The 9 is absolutely luscious.
All right.
The 10 is interesting from a, hey, here's what we're doing as the future of the brand. So ultimately, what I think Infinity needs to do is just clear out all their products, just wipe them all away. Even though I do like that Q60 Red Sport 400, drove that.
Yeah.
I like it. Just not enough to keep it around any longer.
It was good. Let's kill it anyway.
So how about wiping away all their products and of any brand?
Okay.
Infinity is the least locked into a corporate styling look.
You're right.
And what they can do for the future. They can electrify everything. And people will be like, sure, Infinity, sweet.
Sure, they're free to run around.
Bring
You're absolutely
it.
Right. That's a very
they
good point.
They are the least encumbered brand.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for the future.
Nobody knows what the names and numbers mean anyway, so you can make it mean whatever you want it to mean. Yeah.
As long as they're not painted white.
That's very funny. I have one last one I want to bring up. Infinity was early to the SUV party. Remember this? They were in pretty early.
Oh, man,
they were taking the rear-wheel drive chassis of their cars, and they were making SUVs out of them. And there was the FX50. That is a 5-liter V8 rear-wheel drive, looks kind of angry SUV. It's not for everybody. They're not common. I was thinking about it today. When's the last time you even saw one? I'm not even sure.
Yeah.
But that is trying to be. It's almost Jeep Hellcat thinking. It's not that big, but you know what I'm saying. It's
sure.
almost that. It's just like, let's put a big engine, big growly engine, and a rear-wheel drive biased SUV that looks like a truck. Let's do that. Very surprising. A little bit of sports car feel to it. FX50 V8 crossover is my last one on Infinity. It's kind of an outlier, but I have to put it in there.
They're actually well-priced now because nobody bought them.
Exactly.
They plummeted, and so if you're kind of looking for that, drive the angry shoe.
The angry shoe. That needs a t-shirt.
Jump into Jaguar. Well, there's been the F-Type. The F-Type is a stalwart, and it's gorgeous, and it's... I actually kind of like the new flavor, the brand new second generation, I'll call it second generation, sort of newly revised
styling. Refresh thing, yeah.
But the F-Type, it's
great.
A standalone, it's sculpture, it needs to be put on a plinth and studied for generations.
Well,
it's beautiful.
Get whichever one you like. That's the thing about the F-Type. It's beautiful and you can kind of get your flavor. And it's one of those cars, honestly, I don't think you need the big boy. I think you can step down and get like middle grade, and you're very happy.
Sure.
Anything 350, 400 horsepower in that car is great. The big monster boys, you don't actually need that.
You and I both liked that Edition 400.
We did.
It was actually all-wheel drive.
All-wheel drive, yeah.
This doesn't drive like an all-wheel drive car.
Yeah, it was 400 horsepower, all-wheel drive. It was excellent. I think that's a very good one. I have to bring up the XE. The XE is the alt car. You really want a 3 Series, but you don't want to be another guy in a 3 Series.
What else is out there in
the
car land?
The XE. There's that one. I also have the E-Pace on my list. That is the Macan-sized SUV from Jaguar. The problem is that they're crazy priced, but they are very nice. Look at our SUV episode. We put that up against the Volvo XC40 two seasons ago. That was season 4. And that's a good episode. That's actually available on Prime right now as well.
Yeah, that E-Pace is actually a sports car bias. That's their thinking behind it. It wasn't merely just, hey, let's make a small CUV. Come to find out, they actually had a sports car thinking in mind when they designed it. So it drives differently than you think. Quite nice. The I-Pace is on my list simply because of tech and simply because of where they're going. And for Jaguar to come out with this, even though it's expensive and they're not selling that well, I do love what Jaguar is doing.
You and I were on a nasty, snowy, currently snowing back road the other day.
Yeah.
And a guy came uphill in an I-Pace like he was on a rally stage.
Totally.
He was flying.
And
that thing was all about it. It was like, let's do this. It was very funny.
For sure. All right. Off to Jeep. Our last car manufacturer on the list.
For this
before
podcast,
we jump before we jump to a debate,
we do still have a car debate coming, and your questions.
Yeah.
This is how it's going to be a long one, folks.
There's a lot. The Grand Cherokee Trackhawk.
I agree.
Come on,
the Grand Cherokee is okay. The Trackhawk is at least drive it for the laugh. It's one of those cars I can't believe exists.
Rich people who have parties should give these out as favors when you're leaving. Here you go.
How to make friends?
Don't kill yourselves.
Yeah, at least get home before you die. Anyway, yeah.
I'm telling you, if you're shopping for one of these, you're going to buy one. But nobody else would buy it. They figured out how to offer a 700 horsepower heavy SUV.
Yes.
That's all-wheel drive.
Yes.
With a warranty.
Uh-huh.
And it stopped blowing diffs.
And
so it didn't grenade anymore. And it's fast.
And I don't think, honestly, we joked about this when we first drove it. I think that is one of those cars. The Dodge Viper was in this category. You don't cross shop. You just go get that.
Exactly.
You discover it exists. It sparks something in you, and you just go buy that. You don't go, well, let me compare with the, nope, I'm just going to buy a Trackhawk.
Totally.
Done. Also, the JK or JL Wrangler, both of those cover the last decade.
Excellent.
I do prefer the JL, though I would take a JK. And look, my wife's got me shopping Wranglers anyway, but we did do a Moab piece in the brand new JL, and we also... I've since then driven the JK version on Moab as well. Both very, very good. It's the Wrangler. You buy another one of those cars. What's funny about, I actually saw a chart once that was talking about every manufacturer is obsessed with somebody that just bought our car new. They're coming out of, and they define what people are coming out of. Wrangler has the broadest list of any car sold. More people come from more places and buy a Wrangler than anything else on the market.
That's interesting.
Because they just decide, apparently like my wife has, they get to a place in life where like, I want a Wrangler. And then you just buy a Wrangler. You're done.
That's really interesting. Usually the stats are not interesting. That's kind of fascinating.
Often they are quite boring, yes.
You know what? The Gladiator makes my list here too, because that 8% of me that loves monster trucks also wants to go buy a Gladiator. I don't have any need for a Gladiator. I have zero need.
My problem with the Gladiator is they need to offer really big engines in that, and they don't yet.
They don't. I mean, if they do, but if I had a Gladiator, I'd go, you know, have
You'd
somebody
make an elephant.
Yeah. Hennessy. Hello, just here's the Gladiator. Make me pour. Make it fast. Let's, you know, make this thing dance. Wheelies.
We have no fun.
I guess we'll just keep it going.
Yeah, sure. We'll just cut it and jump in.
Dan from somewhere thinks his dad is crazy. I don't know where he's...
Thank you for listening. That's really the podcast for the day.
I'm not sure where he lived, but Dan wrote to us with... he's asking for suggestions for his dad.
Yep.
And he says, my dad needs a new car because he bought about a year and a half ago, without much thought or research, in Dan's opinion, 2012 Audi A4 with about 50,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he said... There's a reason, because he was replacing an Audi A4 with 200,000 miles.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, fine. I see the progression.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now at 97,000 miles, it's developed an excessive oil consumption issue that is present on 2009 to 2011 models and early build 2012s like this one. Dan discovered within about 5 minutes of research, he thought, oh no, this is not going to be under warranty. It's not going to be cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, while his dad could drive the car for another few years, it's probably cheaper to just buy a reliable used car.
Probably.
So, therefore, his budget is whatever he would get for trading it in, $6,000 to $8,000 on the high side,
mm-hmm.
plus about $10,000 to $15,000 extra.
Okay.
I'm going for the max, so that 8 plus 15, that's $23,000.
Okay. So, right around
fairly healthy.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You'd like it to have a manual transmission, enough power to get out of its own way. Seat 4 to 5 people, although we could put that requirement aside and just mm-hmm. go yep. for something different. Yep. He's got a commute that's over 100 miles one way a few days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And above all else, it needs to be reliable.
I love that on this list, your dad has manual transmission. I do
that
love
is cool.
that. That is very cool. I do have to say, once you get to the place where you're carrying oil, like multiple quarts of oil in the back trunk of your car, and you're doing that every time you stop for gas, you are filling it. You either own a rotary from Mazda, or it's time to move on. These are the choices, okay?
The local AutoZone. Hey, Dan's dad. Nice to see you back. We moved the oil that you need. It's over on that corner.
We just brought the whole rack out for you, and you're welcome to buy whatever you want. So let's find something here. I do love that this is a manual transmission, but it's got to do that commute thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to be reliable. I have a couple here. His dad has actually owned... by the way, his dad has owned lots of varied things. So I have two. I guess now that I look at my list again, it's actually three.
I have three. Believe that.
Two of them are related. I'll start there.
Okay.
Honda Civic Si.
Okay. That's a good one.
One of the things I like about that car is its sleeper nature. Okay. It looks kind of staid. It doesn't drive staid. Watch our middles piece from last season, okay? It drives well, but it is an easy manual transmission to commute in. In fact, I feel like it was actually tuned as a commute car. It's one of the things I talk about in the episode. Unlike the Veloster, which was tuned for hair on fire and is super fun, the Civic Si feels like it was tuned to sit and stop and go and still be a great six-speed manual. So I think the Honda Civic is a viable option. You also can get an Accord in a six-speed.
You could.
I have those two. And then my favorite, though, because I think you've been a little spoiled – in a good way, by Audi interiors. I want you in something that's got a nice interior.
Okay.
Go get yourself a used current gen or the very end of the last gen, Mazda 3.
Yeah, that's actually really good. You need to know that the current garage for Dan's dad and mom is a 2013 Ford F-150. This is for towing. 2012 Volkswagen GTI. That's mom's car. His dad has a 2012 Cayman R with a manual. This is an enthusiast we're talking to here. And he's got that 2012 A4 that needs to
drive
go away.
Cayman, how often do you drive the Cayman R?
I hope often.
Drive it more often.
Now, Dan's dad has owned, in his past, a smattering of cars, but this Renault Alliance stuck out. He's owned garbage. You need to not own garbage.
Not to try to offend you, but Renault Alliance, really? Yeah, frightening.
But there's also this Mark II Golf GTI on the list that he's owned in the past, and I love that you ran to hot hatches. My first thought, Dan, was a Kia Stinger GT, but those are expensive. I mean, that, I think your dad would love that car.
Yeah.
Too expensive. Not $23,000. You know what is $23,000? Is a 2017 Chevy Bolt Premier with 32,000 miles in Cajun red tint coat for $23,900.
I like it, but it's not manual. I love it otherwise.
Not manual. But all of your ears are about to melt down because the car I'm about to recommend is one I can't believe I'm about to recommend.
Uh-oh.
How about you go buy yourself a brand new 2020 Toyota Corolla Hatchback XSE manual?
That's good.
As
that is
long,
good.
Under one condition.
Okay.
You have to buy the blue flame paint job.
Buy the blue. Buy the blue. I do like that. That's very good.
30 to 38 is what they claim. 38 miles per gallon. They're fully loaded just over $24,000, which means you can walk in and say, I've got 23. What can we do?
Make
me a deal.
Yeah.
And you can get one. I can't believe I just recommended a
well
Corolla.
Well done. Paul recommends a Corolla this time on
it.
A very special episode of the Everyday Driver podcast.
I know.
Yeah.
You're wondering what you did with Paul, right?
Like, I like that. Dan's dad, and Dan for that matter, and Dan's dad's wife. I mean, they're all listening now.
Exactly.
Hello to the family. Hopefully we've helped you here, and you can find something really fun. More than anything, I just love that you're commuting in a manual. I say kudos to you, and hats off there.
You might not be buying a car right now, but you're probably still looking. We're all looking all the time, and it seems like there's always a new place to search. That's why we love AutoTempest.com.
With AutoTempest, you can only enter your search one time and see results from Cars.com, eBay, all of Craigslist, and many more. Or you can jump to AutoTrader or CarGurus without entering anything new. Your same search on a new site.
So if you're looking for fun or you need a car right now, don't search all over. Start at AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search.
We're jumping to social media questions.
Yeah, let's do it. Evan Jason on Facebook says, the longer my car lasts, the more it feels like cars are turning into tech products, and simple bare-bones vehicles with ergonomic and mechanical controls are falling by the wayside. Is Evan being hyperbolic, or does the future of new simple cars look like the Nissan Versa, and that's it? Oh, no.
Versus for everyone.
I mean, I'm hoping future Tesla Model 3s drive well. It's not that it doesn't. It's just that's not the focus. And I think that as traditional car manufacturers build cars from the, hey, we come from a car manufacturing standpoint and we're looking towards the future, still understand and know about good engineering, driving, all those things. All of our favorite car manufacturers will still understand how to use all the new, whatever it is, electric steering, all these new regulations, all that stuff, to engineer a car that's fun to drive. I still think that's coming. But first, we have to satisfy every SUV and CUV customer there is. So we got to get that out of our system, and everybody has to buy one. And then, oh yeah, fun cars. Huh. Didn't you guys used to make fun cars? Could you make one again?
That's good.
Maybe Nissan starts
That'd
that.
Be nice, so yeah.
Let's get all you satisfied. We've got potato chips for everyone. Here's a CUV. It's electric. Here you go. Now that you have that need covered, you remember fun cars over here? I think that will happen. I think it'll be the dip into like, oh no, everything's the same. And then somebody will be like, you know.
Yeah, we ought to do.
I feel like a salad. Let's make up. Or something different.
The SUVs are the salad.
They
so
are.
Be like, you know what I need?
You know what
ice
I mean?
Cream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something, you know, not nutritious.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. More sugar. Bring that over. Yes, I will take hot fudge,
an 8-year-old's birthday party. Yes. Pizza, hot dogs, soda, burgers. That's it. That's what it needs to be.
8-year-old's birthday party is exactly the, that's the new direction.
The car equivalent.
That's what I want to see a CEO yeah. of a car company be up and be like, we've made a lot of salads. It's exactly. time for an 8-year-old's birthday party.
Finally.
And we will all cheer. Like, and half of the audience, a very serious journalist will be like, I don't get the metaphor. I don't understand what he's saying.
Yeah,
and those of us
about?
In the back would cheer.
Exactly.
Jared Beyer asked a question. He said, I'm turning 40 today. Happy birthday, man. What is the most midlife crisis new car for sale today?
Do you have one?
I have one.
Okay, good.
I have one. It is the Alpha 4C Spider in red.
It's pretty good.
Everybody's going to think you went and bought a Ferrari. It's a convertible, and it's in bright red. If you're just chasing the stereotypical thing, that or, of course, obviously the cliche is the vet. But I'm just trying to think about one of the things that checks all the boxes. Did you see Jared? Jared got a convertible, a red convertible. He must be going through a midlife crisis. That's that car. Done.
All right, there's a question over here from Combat Conductor asking if we have any plans to get automotive leaders on the podcast. Mm. We'd love to hear Albert Bierman chat about the M2M story like we talked about,
yeah.
or anybody from Nissan about anything, like just to reassure us that we're all going to be okay. Nissan exists, and it's still going to exist, and you remember cars, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The pizza, hot dogs,
fun you guys. 8-year-old birthday party.
Offer like
this is our new direction.
Junky Costco food. I'm sorry, it's delicious, but it's not nutritious. It's terrible for you.
Rant.
Cheese all over everything. I mean, are they going to do it? So the question back to you is, what would you give us if we do? Who do you want to see? I like your suggestions here, but who else do you want to see? If I could get some notable designers' names, does that resonate with you?
That'd be cool.
I'm asking back at you, and I think I'm hearing yes based on your question. It's not an often times that we do this, and you've probably noticed we haven't had tons of guests.
Yeah.
But I'm all for it. I'm especially with future stuff, and I think we just want to hear people talk to car enthusiasts straight up.
Yeah.
Car lover to car lover.
That's talk the thing. To me. I think it'd be cool if we could have some folks on the podcast and they could share their car love. We hear that they're influential in the car world. Let's hear them talk as car enthusiasts versus just what's the corporate thing. It could be very interesting. I do like that. That's pretty cool. Kevin Bell on Instagram says, have you seen James May's Our Man in Japan show on Amazon Prime?
Mm.
Just started watching this with my son. I've seen
Did you?
It. It's an odd topic. But his question is, what's the thought? And he said he really likes James May as a presenter. Kevin, I stopped here on this question for this one reason. It's not because we both have ridiculous hair. But honestly, he is my litmus test.
Okay.
I am amazed at him as a presenter.
Yeah.
He does a fantastic – he is my favorite of the three Top Gear guys.
Sure, sure. I can see that.
I really, really like him. And again, it's not a hair thing. I really like him because he does a fantastic job of seeming very organic all the time.
Yeah,
and
he
isn't concerned about making fun of himself or having himself fail. And it makes him relatable and approachable. But yet once you dig in – the guy clearly is smart. He has a very broad range of things that he's experienced. I watched his old he did a Toy Story show about all the toys that you grew up with and can we make him do crazy things. My son and I love all these. They're very, very cool. I think he's a superb presenter, and that's why I'm watching the Japan show. I'll be honest with you. I would never have turned it on if it wasn't him, and it's pretty cool.
You know what I like about him is his childlike thinking in terms of
– Agreed.
Why can't we approach this with this idea? We would as a kid. Why do we have to conform to adultness and – you know, well, that's just the way it's done, and you have to act your age and all that stuff. The example with the astronauts who had Corvettes, and he was talking about the NASA program and everything that was surrounding the Corvette buying and the Corvette ownership with just this, wow, so this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is sort of like, yeah. And then he put this spin on it that was just – it wasn't – child likes the wrong word. It was just this sense of wonderment and appreciation that few presenters have.
Yes. And he did – watch James May on the Edge of Space. That's another great one that he does where he goes up in a U2. Really, really cool. U2 spy plane. Very cool. And think about the fact that last season of Grand Tour, James May is the one that drove the Porsche 917.
Oh, yeah.
And as much fun as get made of that guy, clearly he also can genuinely drive. He's also the guy that drove the Bugatti Veyron, remember?
So
he clearly can drive in spite of all the fun that gets made of him. I think he's underappreciated, and I like him a lot.
There's a family friend that we have, and he's a Delta Airlines pilot. He's captain and flies around the world. He's flown for the military for a long time. And he and I were talking over Christmas break about his opportunity that he got to go with those guys that chase – the U2s
down
the runway
for the landing
to talk them in for the landing
because they can't see. Yeah,
that was an episode actually. I think on the prior Top Gear when the three guys were on Top Gear.
I think so.
Was that then?
It's hard to say, but yeah, they used a Hellcat to chase. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So our friend, he had this opportunity to go with the current guys doing this.
Yeah.
They've upgraded to Tesla Model S's.
Okay.
Because they used to have Pontiac G8s, I think.
I don't know. It's always been super powerful, big things.
V8s to get down the runway. And so it's a lesson in precision driving. But what the drivers are doing is talking the pilot into the ground, essentially, that single wheel under the U2. And our friend got to ride with the driver and right up under the airplane.
Yep.
I mean, he was right there. And I was just, I mean, we're all just stunned
amazing.
At the story.
It. I love
so
it.
Cool. And then, of course, the Blackhawk story about the, you know, the... pilots, you know, the two pilots in
the Blackbird?
Blackbird, excuse me.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
The Blackbird, you know, doing the high-speed run. That's such a great story.
Yeah, it's very funny. We've got so many good questions. Let's see what else we can deal with that I can jump through real quick. Okay, I got a tire question here. Let me see if I can cover that one. Where was the... There it is. You've got a Corolla. The Minty Mini on Instagram nondescript silver sedan daily that's his Corolla. It came, you must have bought it used this way, came with studded snow tires.
Mm.
He's got them on, and he's going, what the heck are these for? And he's genuinely asking that question.
Fair enough.
I need studded tires?
Fair enough.
He can't believe the noise. He's actually gone to wearing foam earplugs because he can't stand the noise so much. Do I need studded tires? What's the point? And are there alternatives? Studded tires, honestly, are great if you deal with a lot of ice.
Okay.
If you are dealing with, my street is covered in ice regularly, studded tires are pretty much the solve. Okay? How often are you really doing that? And it sounds like you aren't, based on what you're describing. It sounds like you aren't. So you can get any kind of good studless snow tire and probably have plenty of grip anywhere you go. Get out of the studded tires. My dad had studded tires for a while on his truck in California, and he'd leave them on for like 4 months. And it was like, what are you doing?
You're kidding me.
He was in California at like 2,500 feet, and they would occasionally get snow, and he ran studded tires on his Avalanche for a couple of seasons until he burned them through. And I was always like, what are you? They came to see us once, 700-mile road trip.
Oh.
In like the shoulder season. It was like March.
No.
And he's on studded tires the whole way. And my mom at one point said very, very, just very innocently, people kept looking at the Avalanche. I was like, you think? As you came thundering up from miles behind them. Actually, that's the other way around. My dad drives slow enough. They came thundering up behind you. But they just heard you for miles. So get out of the studded snows. You don't need them.
Kevin R. on Facebook asked me when I'm going to make a wash, clean your car video series. And then Rich A. says, that's, you know, the next feature film because it's going to be so long.
Hang on to your seat, folks.
It's coming.
Yeah.
And then last question for me. There's a question from Parmalat asking about traffic and lane-specific speed limits that we discussed. Parmalat's in the Boston area, suffers the Boston traffic, and sees the fundamental problem is the part between the seat and the steering wheel, not the laws, not the roads. People simply drive too close to the car in front of them, causing that inevitable accordion effect and unnecessarily slowing and stopping. Is there any technology that can solve this? Ultimately, no. I think it's just people paying attention.
And yeah, driver training. We come back to it many times. Driver training, paying more attention, all of that would be helpful. I have to touch on the Lancer real quick. Clint Morris and Ben Warren both asked me questions about the Lancer. I could go for a while, but I won't. Here's the two questions. Clint said, as a result of the Lancer grenading itself... and there, many of you have had interesting questions about selling it to another YouTube channel, and a couple of people have said you want to buy it. I will get into some of that, but not right now. Do I now want to buy something crazy reliable is what they're both kind of asking. Do I want to buy something crazy reliable and boring? And the example given to me was to just buy a Camry. Okay, that's what Clint says. Should I just buy a Camry and just accept something reliable? And Ben says, am I going to recommend vehicles differently as a result? The answer to both is no. It's that pay-to-play thing. Look, I don't like this experience. I'm not excited about the financial loss of it. None of that excites me. But honestly, the loss of it for me is also the fact that I liked the Lancer.
Hmm.
I liked driving it.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to think about owning, paying for a car I don't enjoy. Even if it runs, I don't enjoy it.
Fair enough.
In the case of the Phaeton, which I know is ridiculous... The enjoyable part about it is I've also realized this, and it shouldn't take me this long to realize it, but I like quirky, weird, what is that car? And that's so the Phaeton fits perfectly. It's more interesting than the Audi A8 because it's like, wait, what is that now? Is that a big Passat? What's going on? A Jetta XL. There it is.
So, Tag is great.
But I like that car because it did cost so little that it adds personality to it. That car new would be far less interesting. The Phaeton would be far less interesting new. It's interesting because it has personality, because it was so cheap. I like cars that have some sort of quirky personality. And just like with people, cars with personality...
People can grenade, too.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, sometimes the ones with lots of personality will grenade all over the place.
Grenade.
But just like with people, cars with personality also have rough edges that are harder to live with. We've all met people that are sure. just kind of milquetoast. They're perfectly fine, but they're boring.
Sure.
They're fine. There's nothing actually wrong with that person. I just want to go talk to my crazy friend because my crazy friend is crazy and kind of fun as a result. That's me in cars.
So you like the fun Bobby of cars.
I like the fun Bobby of cars, just with less alcohol and driving. Yes.
Thank you guys for all your questions. Please keep them coming, including your Topic Tuesdays. Hope you're enjoying the series as we're at right now. And yeah, email us for feedback, your questions, your debates, all of that stuff, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Or on the website, you can find us up under the About tab in the top right corner. There's a contact button right there. You can hit that and we get the emails in the same place. Thanks a million. We're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.